This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's roundup. There's no special announcements or anything, so let's jump right in. First up, Qrix has just released a new firmware update for the Mega EverDrive Pro, which is the ROM cart for the Sega Genesis that also plays Sega CD and Mega CD games, as well as Master System. And this firmware update focuses on BIOS loading. So there's a couple of different options. First, if you place a BIOS file in the same folder as the Sega CD or Mega CD game that you're trying to launch, it'll automatically launch with that BIOS. So I think a pretty common use case for this would be somebody like myself that mostly plays American Sega CD games, because that's what I grew up playing. But when I want to play a Japanese game, I would want to load it on the Japanese BIOS. So I could have whatever BIOS that I want already in that folder for my favorite games, so I wouldn't have to toggle back and forth. Also, you could just launch the BIOS files as if they were a game and be able to see the Sega CD boot screen and hear the music, which is neat. It's not really super useful, which Qrix himself admits for this, but it's very cool, and I'm glad that he added that, because that's one of those nostalgic moments, right? Because I always say, once you get into a game, right, once you plug your cartridge in or you get past the title screen and you get past the first level, nostalgia's gone. It's either a good game that you're going to keep playing, or it's not, and you're not going to play it anymore. But sometimes you just kind of want to have that original feel. And every time I hear the US Sega CD music, it brings me right back to my grandparents' house where I used to sit on the floor and play that thing. So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. There's also a bunch of things that you could do with Sega Master System BIOSes as well. So you could also launch for custom ones or kind of check those out. And there's some bug fixes and some other additions, which depending on what you're working on might be completely relevant to you or might not. But either way, if you want the full list of changes, just check them out here. And you know, if you already own a Mega EverDrive Pro, you might as well just get it. And all of Qrix's products could always go back to older firmwares. So if you load this up and for whatever reason you don't like the new features, you could just save your the med folder that's on the SD card. And in fact, when I upgrade these, I usually take the Mega EverDrive folder and then add an underscore and a date to it. And then I load up the newer firmware, and if I ever need to go back, I could just do so by renaming that other folder and deleting the new one. But if you want more details, check out the post. And as always, thanks to Qrix for continuing to support products that were already complete and working great. So any kind of new feature is always appreciated. A fan group has just restored and remastered the Japanese horror movie Sweet Home, which was made into a Famicom horror game back in the late 80s. And this is kind of a neat story, and while it's not directly related to retro gaming, it kind of is, because that game Sweet Home sort of started out the horror genre in video games and led to things like Resident Evil. So the fact that a fan group has used the Doomsday Duplicator project, which was also used to restore some Laserdisc-based games and some other awesome they used that in order to restore this from Laserdisc copies. And I've talked about Doomsday a lot. I did two interviews with the crew. If you're interested, they're just at the bottom of the post here. But the thing that I want to really stress about the Doomsday project, whether you're using it for VHS or Laserdisc, I think the number one feature of this that you just can't get from even the most perfect direct transfer is the ability to take multiple sources and combine that data into one very high quality one. So basically, yes, you could take the movie Sweet Home on Laserdisc and you could run it through a really good capture card and get a direct 480i capture, and then use AI upscaling to try to make it a decent looking 4K image. However, what if you had 10 or 15 or 20 of those Laserdiscs? Using the Doomsday project, you could take all of those, and with some special software that they've created, it could take the best bits from each and be able to restore it and put it together so that as much information as possible is used to recreate it. So this is good for both any kind of pit rot on LaserDiscs. So maybe there's just a couple of sections of one that aren't perfect, but it's also just good because you're able to extract as much data from those as possible. And that really is the killer feature of Doomsday. There's a couple other reasons why you might want to use it over direct capture, but honestly, that for me is really what sells it and why it's truly a preservationist's tool for doing things like this that you would not have been able to do with just, not able to do in the same quality with just a basic rip. I'm still working on my VHS magnetic tape media capture video. It's probably going to be a few more months because it's just everything you think you might know about it, the more you dig into it, it's a rabbit hole that's pretty crazy. But for stuff like this, there is no doubt in my mind, Doomsday is the best way to go about doing it. For your own home videos, I mean, you could, but I don't know if I would go through that much trouble when you could probably get something that's 90 to 95% as good with a direct transfer. Basically, if you only have one copy of something, unless you really are doing, you know, reusing it for other stuff, this might actually just be a case for direct transfer. I don't want to get too off topic because I'm going to do a whole video on that soon, but I wanted to bring this up both because it's awesome to see its Sweet Home get restored like this, but just because this is a perfect example of why the Doomsday Project is so important and what else we could do with it. So please check out Alex's post for all of the info, for links to the full version with English subtitles, and even for patches for the game Sweet Home for the Famicom, so you could play that in English too if you wanted to. Retro Gamer Store is now selling transparent trim pieces for their SNES case kits. So if you had done an SNES transfer or if you'd seen any of the videos I'd done on it, you have to use the original cartridge flap and the original controller port plastic, which sometimes that came out fine, but other times if you had a yellowed and brittle SNES, then you would be stuck with those pieces. So you would have a beautiful case with an ugly front controller port. And while you can't really see it with the controllers plugged in, it does look a lot nicer to have those pieces cleaned up. And now you don't have to worry because there are three versions to match the three different colors of the SNES case, the transparent purple, clear, and smoke transparent as well. And when I had done that live stream with the purple case, I had actually found some paint and painted the front controller ports and cartridge flap purple. And I thought it came out really good. I picked a purple to as closely match the power and reset buttons as possible, and I loved it. I was very happy with it. I didn't feel like it needed any more of an upgrade until I saw these pieces and was able to try them myself. And then I noticed, wow, what a massive upgrade. So I really think that if you've already purchased one of these, or especially if you haven't yet, you should definitely include this as part of the purchase. And you could mix and match if you wanted, but I certainly loved how they all kind of matched together. And I just thought it's very cool that they're now being, this is now an option. Because don't forget, all of the Retro Gamer Store stuff is injection molded and very high quality. So none of this stuff is cheap to make. And I know I have to say this every time I talk about it, but these are expensive. They're not overpriced. There are massive differences between that. Expensive is something that just costs a lot of money, but it's not like there's a massive margin here. It costs so much to make these, and that's why it costs so much to sell them. Overpriced is if like they cost $1 to make, but they sold them for $1,000. That's overpriced, but not this. The percentages aren't very high on these things. The only other thing to note is that the trim is currently not available for the Super Famicom shells, only SNES. Hopefully they'll get around to selling those as well, because I've seen a lot of yellowed and brittle Super Famicom shells that I think could really benefit from that. Also, they're selling the smoke black version of the NES front loader's bezel. So this might actually be a pretty cool thing to mix and match, because even if you got the transparent clear SNES shell, you might not want the full clear bezel piece. You might want the smoke to sort of match the black controller ports as well. That's obviously just all preference. It's whatever you think is best, but I'm just glad it's an option because you know, this just might be something that you want. I know I used the original black pieces on mine that I thought looked better, but I might have used the smoke ones instead if I had the ability to do that. So if you want more info on any of these clear shells, please check out any one of the live streams that I did on them. I've been covering these as they've been released. And even that live stream I did with Russ Lyman really went into the front loading NES's bezel pieces and the different color schemes and stuff like that. So if you wanted more of an idea of this stuff, definitely check those out. But I absolutely love them. I think if you have a brittle, cracked SNES, that this is the way to go. And I also think that if you have a mint condition SNES, but you really want one of these, that's the perfect opportunity to sell yours to somebody with a yellowed, brittle one who just wants a nice-looking original SNES case. So everybody could win in this one. I do wish they were cheaper, but it's not overpriced. It's just expensive because that's how much they have to be. If we could somehow sell 5,000 of these, then the price would drop pretty significantly, but that's just not the case with these niche items. So hopefully Martin will keep making these because I really love them and the quality really truly is there. So check out the post if you want more info, and I have links to every single one of the ones that is sold for anybody interested. A new firmware was just released for the Analog Pocket that adds cores and the support for their new cartridge adapter set. So when the Pocket was released, they also announced that they were going to be having cartridge adapters, and I believe the Game Gear one was available either right away or pretty shortly afterwards, and that is exactly what you would expect. It just plugs into the back of the Pocket and allows you to plug Game Gear games into it, just to use it as if it was an original Game Gear, but with all the advantages of the Pocket. And this kit, which was $100 and comes with three adapters, allows the same thing, but for different consoles. It allows for Neo Geo Pocket or Pocket Color cartridges to be plugged in, all TurboGrafx, PC Engine, or Super Graphics cards, and also one that could be used with the Atari Lynx games. So basically, if you have those original cartridges or cards or whatever you want to call them, depending, then, and you want to be able to use those and not ROMs, then these are the way to do it. Now, of course, OpenFPGA exists for the Pocket. There is a core that allows you to use TurboGrafx on there. And I believe there's some beta cores for things like Neo Geo Pocket, but I don't know if they're fully vetted yet. And I don't know how far along they are. I don't own a Pocket. I think it is awesome. I'm a big fan of it. I think it is the choice for FPGA mobile gaming. I'm just not a handheld gamer. I like tiny phones and giant TVs. But I do really support the product, and I think it's fairly priced for everything that you get. I'm not sure if $100 for these cartridge adapters is worth it, but it might be if you really do have a large collection of original games that you just want to play and have it feel like the original. So official support for all of those different cores is pretty cool. And, you know, if this is for you, absolutely buy one and check it out. And if not, this, you just would rather load up some ROMs, maybe consider supporting some devs on Patreon who might port their cores over to the Neo Geo Pocket, to the Analog Pocket, and maybe finish things like Neo Geo Pocket Color. That's pretty funny. I wonder how many times I've accidentally called it the Neo Geo Pocket or something. But anyway, also, there's a couple of other bug fixes and stuff, things for like fixes for the dock, some other stuff. So if you want a full list of changes, just check out the post. And, you know, if you own a Pocket, download the firmware right from Analog. I linked to that too, just in case. And you know, see if it's something that adds or any features or fixes to yours. The developer Extremes has just posted a teaser video showing basically a homebrew Ethernet adapter for the GameCube. So to step back for a moment, the GameCube had both a modem as well as an Ethernet adapter option that you could plug into the bottom, and a bunch of games like Mario Kart supported LAN play, and then some games like Phantasy Star had the Phantasy Star Online, which I believe fans have recreated that server now. But the original Ethernet adapter is very expensive and hard to find. So Extremes was working on a way to make a homebrew version of that and have software support it via Swiss, which, if you don't know what Swiss is, I could talk for an hour about it, but basically most people should be using Swiss right now to get every bit of power out of your GameCube, including just using original CD games or DVD games if you wanted that as well. It's not just for homebrew. And this is an awesome project. Now, once again, it's just a teaser. It's not available yet. You can build your own, but WebHDX is also looking into selling them on his store. And at the moment, it's really going to just emulate LAN play. It has to be there's going to have to be a newer hardware revision vetted for it to do things like RetroNAS support, which you can currently do with the official LAN module. But this is just super, super exciting. Alex has a ton of info in the post, but really, this is just one of those things where we're restoring functionality and fixing a problem and adding new features. So anybody who wants all of this stuff, you could say go hunt down an Ethernet adapter, but there doesn't seem to be that many to go around. So being able to just recreate this from scratch is absolutely awesome. And it's so cool to see this stuff happen. So as always, thanks to Extremes for all of the work that he does. I mean, anybody that follows him knows all of the projects he's been assisting with over the years, including making my videos better and some of my research. And now this is something that anybody who's a fan of a GameCube could certainly benefit from. So we'll keep you posted when there's an official release of this, when hardware goes on sale and all of that. If you want to try making your own now, if you're a dev that wants to test this, there are some instructions that are out just right in Alex's post and everything. But this is one of those like give you a heads up type of posts, and there'll be some more stuff released soon that's, you know, that's very cool. But I'm just so excited for this. It's really neat to see something like this come about. And I definitely would love to see an eventual version that supports RetroNAS, because just being able to boot your GameCube and then load your games over your own home network is such a luxury for me. I wish I had this years ago, and I use it constantly with my Mister. And this really is one of those things that a lot of people don't really get until they try it themselves. I mean that respectfully. I'm not trying to talk down to anybody. I just think this is one of those things that once you have a RetroNAS set up and you start using it, you go, oh, I get it now. This is pretty awesome. So hopefully we'll see that in the future, but at least for now, being able to have LAN play with, you know, without spending an arm and a leg on an adapter is awesome. Now it's time for this week's Mr. Updates, care of Lou from Lou's Retro Source. As usual, I'm just going to skim through these, giving my thoughts where I feel like it, but if you want more information and visual examples, please check out Lou's video. First up, Shane Lynch has released updates for Mr. Cast, which fixed some issues and reduced CPU usage up to 50% on the Source PC that you're sending stuff to the Mr. And this is such an amazing project that I'm very sad I haven't had time to mess with yet, but I hope to soon. Also, Ruleset has forked the Groovy Mr. Core to support PWM, which reduces banding with high color content, and Shane's working on implementing that as well. So that really was a project that started out kind of cool, and now it's just exploded into very awesome stuff that you could now do on a CRT through your Mr., which for some people might be much, much easier than the alternatives. Also, Wizzo has posted a free Patreon article that explains how to integrate Tap2 and Remote on the Mr. using some new commands that were implemented. This is something that I've just started to mess with, and it's just changed the way I use Mr. I mean, I know that's a little dramatic, but I couldn't possibly be more accurate and honest about that. The Remote app is ridiculously good. It makes everything so much easier. And while I just got a Tap2, thanks to Clint for that, I was able to add games to the NFC cards just by going through Remote and clicking on it. It was the easiest thing in the world. So the Tap2 project always looked pretty cool until I got one in my hands, and now I know how amazing it is. I can't wait to do some more footage on that and kind of show that off. But there's other great videos on it as well out there that are already out there, but very, very cool stuff. Also, UberYoji released a boot ROM animation for the N64 core. I am a big fan of these. I really love booting a core into something like that, so you just always have something going. And that's how, when you see any B-roll footage of my videos of the Mr. now, you always see it booting with UberYoji stuff on there. So that's very cool. Also, Robert's still working on the N64 core. Some more bugs were fixed, and an optional HDMI output mode has been added, which enables the display of 480i games in 480p. So it eliminates the need for any deinterlacing, which is awesome. Also, Hans sent over a new revision of the Mistex PCB board for fabrication, and it's also getting really exciting, because if this project kind of continues to move at its current state, you should be able to get Mr. cores on either cheaper hardware or more expensive, more powerful hardware that could allow for things like, you know, possibly more cores being added that can't run on the DE10. So that's pretty awesome. The Game Boy MIDI core is going to be updated to add the noise channel and allow individual patches per pulse channel. So once again, that's for musicians who want to make chiptunes. Analog Pocket has had the update all script updated as well. And some more features were added there. If you follow the Ypsilon, you can see some of the different additions and posts. Also, Hotego and Artemio have been analyzing the Capcom's CPS filter. And this is using stuff like 240p test suite, MD4EA to analyze CPS hardware to get more accurate hardware emulation of it. I've been meaning to do a separate post just on this. Hopefully time will allow soon, but this is pretty awesome. And this is really just goes to show how amazing teams of people working together could accomplish some pretty awesome stuff. And also there's more fixes to Saturn games, which is also awesome. So excited to see that core progressing. So as always, thank you to everybody involved in the Mystery Project. And also thank you to Lou for keeping up with all of this stuff, because there's no chance that I could. So please don't forget to subscribe to Lou as well. Another batch of RetroTINK 4Ks will go on sale this Saturday, March 9th at 4 p.m. New York City time. This is one of two upcoming batches, so if they sell out very quickly like they did last time, don't worry, another batch is already in production and should be here within 2 months. So I don't know if it's going to be as crazy as last time. Last time the website crashed, even though Mike tried to take precautions to not have that happen. Mike also reached out to the web provider again and said, hey, I have a big sale coming up on Saturday. The last time I told you that, you ignored me and the website crashed. Can you not ignore me this time? But, you know, for any IT people out there that were trying to suggest things to Mike last time, you know, thank you for your suggestions, but this is a solid web platform that's being hosted on real servers, not some basement server, you know, running on one PC somewhere. This is a real store website. So hopefully the site won't crash this time. Fingers crossed, but worst possible case scenario, a much bigger batch is coming within 2 months. And by then, everybody who wanted one should be able to get them. So this is exciting. You know, the price is still the same, $750. And of course, just like I say with the Retro Gamer Store shells, it's expensive, but not overpriced. There's a huge difference between those things. However, if you don't want to spend that much money on it, that's totally fine. Check out a couple other videos I did. The Get a Scaler video shows options from free to $30 to all the way up to this. And of course, if you just want a way to connect your classic consoles with basic cables, the original or the RetroTINK 2X Pro, not the original 2X, still a great option. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and it's much cheaper. But honestly, the TINK 4K has exceeded all of my expectations already, and Mike's not even done with it. There's a couple of cool new things that he's adding, but honestly, when I was talking to Mike over the past few months about stuff that I'd like to see, there's a lot of it already implemented. I'm continuing to always beta test new features. I'm talking to Mike all the time. Some ideas of mine are much crazier than others, but a lot of stuff is already in play, and this really is worth the money if you need it. I just want to be clear about that. You know, this is very often when I talk about stuff, I say things like, oh, it's only $10. It's a tool in your toolbox. You should probably buy this no matter what, even if you only use it once or twice a year. That's not this. Take a look at all the features. Take a look at what it could do today and just think, is this for you? And if the answer is no, that's totally fine. There's a lot of people that think the answer is yes. Obviously, their website wouldn't have crashed last time, but I love it. I absolutely would still recommend it and probably will for a very long time over all other options just based on what it could do. And it's already a solid performing product. It was before the launch. I think it's been ready for launch for a long time now. But even now with all the extra updates, it's just really an awesome thing. And I'm just so happy to see Mike being able to sell these and get them into people's hands. And I'm going to have a bunch more TINK 4K related videos coming up soon. One I've been working on for, I guess, almost a year now. That's just kind of overwhelming, but hopefully that could be a help for people. But I'm going to do a bunch of other TINK related stuff. And I also want to do maybe some live streams or something to show some of the very weird use cases that I've been implementing the TINK 4K into my setup. One of my favorites is taking 24p content and playing it on a CRT in 72 hertz so that you get no 3:2 pull down motion judder, and you get full smooth panning, but on a CRT, and doing that in different resolutions. And I don't know, I've had a blast with this, and it's certainly changed the way I watch a lot of content on CRTs, on flat panels, whatever. So I'll stop ranting about it. You know, I probably should have just said the date and walked away. You all know what this thing is, but Saturday, March 9th, this Saturday, 4 p.m. New York City time, look up whatever that is in your region, and cross your fingers that the website holds up. And speaking of scalers, a second batch of OSSE Pros just went up for sale. The price is the same as last time, but these come in black injection molded cases, which I know a lot of people wanted the black and were asking for it. So it's pretty cool that these were now available in this color. And it's a much larger batch. And while technically this is a pre-order, the devices are en route to video game perfection now. So you should only have to wait a week or so before they're shipped out to you. So I guess it's still technically a pre-order. Technically, things might go wrong, but this isn't one of those things where you pay your money and then wait for it to come into production. They've already been made and paid for and all of that stuff. The price is the same as last time, which for me in the New York City area came for about $360. That included shipping and the power supply and remote and everything like that. And also, a few other things to note. First, a quick one. While the OSSC Pro that I tested ran at a perfectly reasonable temperature, if you know that you're not going to be putting it in a well-ventilated area, or if you just would rather have a fan, it's super easy to install. The case already has the fan cut out right there. All you need to do is basically buy a fan and plug it in. I did a post on that. I also linked to a really good fan that you could use that's all plug and play. You don't have to mod anything. So that's kind of an advantage. Also, in the announcement for this, in the Video Game Perfection newsletter, there was a couple other things that they talked about. And while none of this is available now, I thought it would be a pretty cool thing to just kind of go over very quickly. First, the extra AV out for people who want to do things like maybe downscaling is still in progress, but it's pretty much done. I tested, I believe, one of the final prototypes, and that should be ready for sale somewhat soon. So basically, it's like a built-in digital-to-analog converter without any of the issues you might run into buying the cheap DACs or cheap ADCs and DACs from the, the stuff that I talked about with Kuro. So if you're going to be using your OSSC Pro as a downscaler, this is going to be a big advantage and definitely something to think about buying. Also, the AV input board is still in development, but Marcus is looking to add composite and S-video this way. And there's also a module that might have RF input as well, which I think is very funny and very cool. I do think that's one of those weird things that they're not going to sell a million of, but I bet you people would appreciate that. And, you know, maybe Marcus, if this works out, would consider making this into an external product. I'm not sure if he's fully relying on the OSSC Pro's FPGA to do any of the conversions, but I think there would be a few people out there that would want to buy a brand new RF to composite converter, both because you don't want to have to deal with a big clunky VCR, but also, as we all know, old components go bad. So finding new old stock RF modulators and building a new product around it might be something people would be interested in. And, you know, there's also the other AV adapters that Marcus had talked about as well. So if you want to see any of this stuff in action, check out the live stream I did with Marcus. We didn't have the composite adapter then, but I did show a lot of the other stuff. And plus, it's always fun and cool hanging out with Marcus. And, you know, I just got to say, this isn't the RetroTINK 4K, but it's half the price. And I really love that there's a scaler for everybody. And, you know, you hear people talking about scaler wars, but that's just never been the case. RetroTINK products and OSSC products have been coexisting since the release of the RetroTINK. And Mike and Marcus have had nothing but good things to say about each other. And I really think that each one of these has their own use case. I mean, you know, you can go spend, you know, all the money on a TINK 4K and get everything. And then if you want to step down, you really just think from that point, what devices have the features you're looking for? Maybe it's the RetroTINK 5X, or maybe it's the OSSC Pro. And the Pro is essentially two scalers. It's a line multiplier and a scaler. So, you know, you'd really have to dig into your use case and see. The average person who just wants to plug composite video and component into a scaler and put it on your TV is probably going to go with the RetroTINK 5X. No disrespect at all to Marcus. But I think there's a lot of tinkerers out there that would prefer the OSSC Pro for some of its unique features and for just the basic line multiplying aspects of it. So, you know, there's choices for everybody. And then, of course, you could just go back to the original OSSC, which is still freaking awesome and much cheaper even than this. And same thing with the RetroTINK 2X Pro. And same thing, different inputs, different use cases. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, these are all things that I think coexist very nicely. They all have their own price points. And I love that there are all these options. Also, don't forget that if you had invested in a RetroTINK 2X, any of them, actually, and you want to use that with any of the OSSCs, you could do that simply by putting it in pass-through mode. And with the OSSC Pro, you even just put it right into its HDMI input. So I demoed this a while back and, you know, it worked totally fine. I wouldn't tell anybody to go out and buy a Tink 2X just for this purpose. But if you already own one, there's your composite and S-Video adapter as well. So yeah, I'm just a big fan of all of this stuff. And I'm really happy to see the OSSC Pro be made in decent quantities so people who wanted them could get them. The price is the same. And while I did like the white case a lot, I feel like the black case is probably going to be what most people wanted. So here you have it, an injection molded case option as well. So links for everything are in the description. Order it right now, and barring some crazy thing happening, it should ship within a week or so. Well, that's it for this time. As always, thanks to everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you to people who support in any way, because it really is you who's keeping all of this stuff going. So thank you all so much, and I will see you next week for the 400th one of these. Can you believe I've done 400? Anyway, I'll see you next week. This week's roundup is brought to you by Neo Paradigm Entertainment, connecting Southeast Asian influencers with opportunities in the West.